Hi, and welcome to Forest for the Future, the podcast where we explore innovation, challenges, and ideas shaping the future of sustainable forestry, responsible sourcing, and, of course, FSC. In today's episode, we continue our conversation on the ongoing revision of FSC's chain of custody standard, the standard to which almost 70,000 companies are certified worldwide. This time, we will be diving into one of the most forward-looking parts of that revision process: reclaimed materials, meaning recycled materials, and circular business models in FSC. Circularity is becoming a key part of how companies think about sustainability, and models like repair, take back, and leasing and reuse are increasingly common. But they don't yet fit into the FSC certification system. That is what this part of the revision is aiming to change. We also have other topics which we don't have solutions for right now: pre-consumer wood and salvage wood. Both of that are also being dealt with in this revision process. To help us unpack what all of this means, what the solutions on the table suggested are, I am joined by Morten Brother, who's a senior specialist and analyst at the FSC Circularity Hub, and Doug Patterson, who is director at Renewable Strategies, and both of them are members of the FSC Chain of Custody Working Group focused on this part of the revision process. Together, we will explore why FSC is moving in this direction, what is changing with reclaimed materials, and what these developments could mean for certificate holders, consumers, and for the larger impact on the world as such. So, why don't we just get started? Welcome, Morten and Doug. Morten, I'd like to start with you. For those who are not that familiar with FSC's work on circularity in connection to FSC chain of custody certification, can you just briefly explain what it is that FSC is doing to support circular economy more in the future?
We have established the FSC Circularity Hub, which is an untraditional way of working with innovation in FSC. We are a team of four people that are talking to our stakeholders, our members, experts on circularity, also in terms of certification, and coming up with solutions that could be integrated in the FSC chain of custody system through the revision process.
Okay, so you just mentioned that we are looking into how it could be introduced into the chain of custody process. What is driving this shift? Why do we need to do so?
First of all, it's about not falling behind. If you look in the chain of custody standard, there is not a word about circular business models. And then we also see interest from the market. We see that certified companies already today are testing these circular business models, like reuse, like repair. They're also implementing them in some regions more than other regions, but it's not only a European thing. And then we also see the legislation popping up. So eco-design, extended producer responsibility, sustainability reporting requirements that actually asks companies to demonstrate their circular actions, to report on their circular actions and strategies. And then the last thing, we see a battle for forest-based materials, resource scarcity, supply chain challenges all over the world. And we also see this future scenario where the demand for forest fibers will exceed what our forests can supply in a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you just mentioned leasing and take back as some of those models that might be able to help companies address resource scarcity in the future. Are these the kinds of circular business models that we are exploring, or are we exploring more? Why have we chosen the ones that we have chosen? And what gaps do they help us address?
We have started with the low-hanging fruits. So it is leasing of FSC certified products, what we also call product as a service. Models where an organization offers customer products for temporary use, but still maintain the ownership. So you can think of a company that rent out furniture to a university, a company that leases displays to exhibition shows, these kind of business models. And then we have take back of FSC certified products as the other one, which we also call reverse logistics. So when organization collects and reintroduce products in the supply chain after their initial sale, why we bring them in right now? They don't require that many clauses. They don't require that many resources to actually integrate in the chain of custody certification. In that sense, it really makes sense to bring these two concepts in right now.
You just mentioned that they don't require a lot of clauses. Can you share a bit more about in detail? I'm hoping about what the main requirements would be for each of those two circular business models.
For both leasing and take back, it is really about demonstrating that the returned product from a leasing period is the same product that went out in leasing in the first place. And similar for take back. And then the second one is product condition. The companies must be able to prove that the certified products that are returned from leasing or from a take back process has not been transformed by the customer. And this is, of course, the big task of the companies to really find a product identification solution that is feasible to implement in terms of costs and also in terms of ensuring that it actually brings the needed documentation. And some products are more easy to implement this on than others.
Yeah, because it sounds like what we're requiring there is some sort of a permanent label, mark, call it what you want, on the product that can make sure that you can actually identify even after a use cycle that, yes, this is in fact the same product.
Yeah. Hmm. And of course, for some products like branded products, like furnitures, that maybe already comes with some kind of identifier, this is probably more easy to implement than for some construction materials that has no labels or no tags. So yeah, there are also other requirements. There are requirements to like include specific information in lease documents, in lease agreements, in take back contracts, like the requirements we already have today for invoices. So there are some formal information that need to be in these kind of documents. And then there are also written in the requirements that you can repair products that are taken back or that are coming back from a leasing process, of course, using only eligible inputs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doug, I'd like to pull you in because you actually come from industry. You help companies get certified and help them maintain their certification. From a company, from a market perspective, what will be the most difficult of all of this for companies to live up to? I immediately stumble on this unique identifier. But is that actually, from your perspective, the most difficult one for companies to live up to?
Well, on the working group for reclaimed materials, our key items were traceability and identification. How that's done wasn't so crucial as just making sure that it was done in a way that would satisfy the auditor and the certification body that was dealing with that company. So there are certainly going to be some challenges for some companies. I mean, I think of things like Plyform, where the plywood is leased out to do concrete construction and it's brought back again. That's already happening. Most Plyform is not purchased, it's rented, it's leased. So there would have to be something on that plywood to identify it as FSC certified, but a lot of them have inkjet printing on the edge of the plywood. On the side of the plywood, there could be an FSC logo. There are ways in which to do other than the ones that Morten just mentioned. So really, it's going to be up to the product and the producer of the product to determine what would work. Again, it's going to be a conversation with their CBs in terms of whether they'll accept that. In terms of what it means to the market, I mean, I already know of companies that have shipped out flooring, for example, and then some or all of the flooring was returned. It was FSC certified. It was intact. It was packaged. It had a label on it. And the certification body would not allow it to come back into FSC stock to be resold as FSC, even though it was completely intact. So we already have situations where companies are frustrated and want to be able to do this, and they're not being allowed. But again, it's sort of up to the individual auditor or CB to determine what their take is going to be on it. So I think this is could be a big change to a lot of companies out there that are losing FSC product because they do get returns. The other one that happens is damage. When something's damaged in transit, if a company was having those returned, would there be a way for them to repair them depending on what the product is and then again resell it as FSC certified? In terms of leasing, I mean, as Morten already mentioned, you know, there's medical, there's educational, there's business, there's commercial. There's a lot of different companies out there that don't purchase product. And to be able to you know, make use of those products and then return them to the supplier and have the supplier be able to repair them or just reship them back out again as FSC could be a big game changer. And it could mean we could get companies in that normally wouldn't want to be certified or wouldn't think that they fit for certification. And I think that's the key thing is that I don't know that we really know how big the market could be or is for leasing and for take back.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And hopefully it is also a growing market simply because otherwise we'll run out of materials in the end. I'd just like one clarification because it sounds like in your example with the ply form for concrete molding, that from what you said, it sounded like, well, if there's just an FSC label on the product while it's out for leasing or in the process where it's being sold and taken back, then that is enough. Where it sounded more like from Morten's description that it has to be a unique identifier, meaning a unique serial number or a unique QR code on each product. Which of those two is the correct understanding of that requirement?
It's a note in the standard. It's not a requirement. So the note can be interpreted in different ways. And I think there will be instances where it will be up to the individual auditor, the individual certification body, where if they see what does the plywood look like when it goes out, what does it look like when it comes back? Is this clearly the same type of plywood that was sent out? And there may not be a unique identifier beyond an inkjet printing on the edge of the plywood that says something like the chain of custody number of the company. It will be up to the discretion of the individual auditor and CB because it's not a requirement, it's just a note.
Mm-hmm. Morten, do you agree? Is that also how you would see it?
Yeah. If we read the requirements, that is how they are written. And I also think it is very important that the method isn't like prescribed, because we don't want to like rule out any industry or any sector or any product type just because these products are maybe not the most natural ones to think of in terms of product identification. To want to make every sector, every product type, every industry to have a chance to use this concept and to fulfill the requirements.
It sounds like in the end, it's down to some common sense as well and an evaluation from the auditor. But when will that be supported by some guidance or some instruction from the FSC side so we don't get a Wild West where some will reject a setup and others will accept the same one?
As far as I understand or remember, and Doc, you must correct me, there are a few proposed requirements to the chain of custody evaluation standard, but it's not many because there is already a lot of clauses that are meant to ensure that this is not interpreted in 100 different ways. And then FSC will also develop some further guidance on this when the specific requirements are final and concluded, then there will be some guidance materials and some best practices also to guide the companies in finding good methods for this, but also something that I think CBs can use.
And with CBs, you, of course, mean certification bodies. I'm going to do that to you throughout if you use these short forms of FSC so that people not so well-versed can actually also follow the discussion. It's a favorite hobby of mine in these conversations. Okay, so that was take back and leasing. There's another big topic that I know that some are interested in, so I want to make sure that we cover that as well, pre-consumer wood. And in essence, pre-consumer wood are leftovers from secondary processing or a later production that wasn't made on purpose and can't be reused in that same product production setup. So this, for example, could be wood scrap from furniture production, wood scrap from construction processing, etc. Pre-consumer materials have been part of FSC for quite a long time in the paper industry, but not for wood. And now they're being looked at again. Why is that?
Well, as long as FSC is treating pre-consumer paper and wood differently, I think it will be discussed over and over again. And of course, particularly when the COC standards are revised. But also because when we actually have a special focus on circularity and reclaimed materials, which is a prioritized topic in the revision process, this discussion has to take place on pre-consumer wood. Some stakeholders propose that pre-consumer wood is recognized as claim contributing, similar to pre-consumer reclaimed paper, And that's particularly from the wood, board, and panel industry, where they argue that this pre-consumer reclaimed wood is a valuable production material that is comparable to pre-consumer paper. And of course, also that it can promote circularity, encourage reuse. And the other benefits of including that in the FSC system is mentioned from these stakeholders. And then on the other side, we have opposing views that note that some legislation, like the European legislation, they actually classify pre-consumer reclaimed paper as waste, whereas pre-consumer reclaimed wood may not fall into that category. And some of these opposing views may also be saying that this is a proposal that is economically driven and with limited environmental or social benefits. So that's the pros and cons. And I think both perspectives are acknowledged by FSC, and it has been decided that there needs to be a broader consultation with a broader pool of stakeholders to make an informed decision on this.
Mm-hmm. Can you then give us a sense of what those proposals are? What is it that we're asking for input on?
Yeah. In this second consultation that opened on the 15th November, there is a specific consultation on pre-consumer reclaimed wood. So there is a paper on that where FSC has outlined two proposals for the consultation. And the first is that pre-consumer reclaimed wood gets claim contribution. And what FSC is seeking now is to get a good list of all those risks and benefits that are out there. So they have shared this matrix with the stakeholders as a part of that paper. And people are asked to get feedback on whether they agree, but also to add these benefits and add these risks that there might be of recognizing pre-consumer reclaimed wood as claim contributing, but also suggest possible risk mitigation measures. So now is really the time to give FSC these valuable information so we can have an informed decision and not just talk about the same risks and benefits. So that was the first proposal. Mm-hmm. The second is that pre-consumer reclaimed wood has claim contribution when it is from certified inputs. And I need to explain that.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, because today companies, they can actually reclaim wood materials from their own operations, from certified inputs, and then they can classify them with the parent input claim all over. But under those requirements right now, these reclaimed materials are then classified as parent virgin material or leftover material category, and they cannot be used as inputs for FSC recycled claim. They can only be used for FSC mix. And then if an organization opts to classify these reclaimed materials as pre-consumer wood and not as its parent input claim, then they can actually use these materials to do the claim calculations on FSC recycled. So this is a limitation that some stakeholders have addressed that is limiting the proportion of these materials used in FSC recycled products. And therefore, this specific solution has been proposed that pre-consumer reclaimed wood has claim contribution only if they are from certified inputs.
Okay. Let me just try and break that down with my own words. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong. So option one on the table, I am now a furniture producer. I am using certified, non-certified wood. I do not segregate in my production. I have cutoffs. In option one, all of those cutoffs, regardless of whether or not they were FSC certified in the first instance, can now be claim contributing in FSC because we would rather reuse those materials instead of having them not be utilized as FSC, because that could reduce pressure on forests. That was option one. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay. Option two, which is a bit less open, would be I'm still the same furniture producer. I am now only using FSC certified input, or I'm able to segregate my certified and non-certified materials after I've cut parts off. All of the FSC certified goes in one pile, all of the non-certified goes in another pile. I'm also making products that I want to label with FSC recycled because I also have some recycled wood. Currently, I can't do that because the cutoffs don't count as FSC recycled. But with the second proposal, they could count as FSC recycled. So I can choose to use them as FSC recycled, claim contributing, so counting in the volume there, and therefore use an FSC recycled label on the product instead of labeling it with, for example, FSC mix, FSC 100, or whatever the original claim of that wood was. Correct?
Yeah. but it is allowed to use the pre-consumer wood in FSC's recycled product groups. It's just that they don't contribute to the claim calculations. So we are talking about whether the inputs are counting or not.
But in the end, if they don't count, then of course I would also very easily fall under the threshold where I can't actually label my product as FSC recycled, correct?
That depends on if you can source other claim contributing inputs. But of course, there will be, under the percentage system, there will be a limitation. And under the credit system for FSC recycled products, you won't get credits. But you would, if this second proposal was implemented, you could segregate certified inputs from non-certified inputs.
Okay. Well, I guess there's a lot for stakeholders to give an opinion on there. Always a very lovely nerdy discussion. Another nerdy discussion, Doug, and I'm going to transition to you because I know that you also discussed salvaged wood. So what is salvaged wood in the context of FSC?
Forest salvaged wood would be, well, in the U.S. here, we've had some pretty bad hurricane damage.
Mm-hmm.
So there are trees out in the woods, in the forest, that may need to be removed, or some of them may need to be removed. So that would be forest salvaged wood.
Okay. And that the reason why it wouldn't count today is because you can't harvest them if they're not in your harvesting plan? Or is it from the non-certified forest areas?
It basically, is it in a forest environment or isn't it a non-forest environment? So a forest environment would be, as I said, bug kill, hurricane damage, something where you're going into a forest matrix and you're removing the wood. So it's not an FSC certified forest that you're going into, but you could possibly, if you were going to harvest that, and if you wanted to go through the whole mechanism of controlled wood, that would be applicable. That's the wood that would be applicable under the controlled wood standard as salvaged.
Okay.
Non-forest salvage would be urban or agricultural land. So if you're thinking about, like in California, they remove a lot of almond trees at the end of their life. That wood would be non-forest salvaged. The other one would be urban wood. So the municipality is going out to do repair work to a sidewalk, and they have to remove an old oak tree that's in the way in order to do that. Currently, the way in which we've dealt with this wood in the past is that we haven't. The only way that you could make use of urban wood or agricultural non-forest salvaged wood would be if it went to a material recovery facility, or it went to a dump, or it went to a transfer station, and then you recovered it from there. But then it would just be post-consumer, like any other post-consumer material that, you know, has gone to the end of its natural end of its life and is being recovered from that.
And what is the suggestion on the table now?
So the suggestion is that we would have these two distinct categories. One would be under the controlled wood standard, wood that comes from the forest matrix, or logs that come from the forest matrix. And then this non-forest salvage wood, which would come from urban areas and would come from agricultural sources. Currently, the way it's written, this would also not be claim contributing. It would be neutral.
Okay.
So the non-forest salvage wood would only be neutral. In the consultation, that's one of the questions that's being asked, is should that non-forest salvage wood be claim contributing?
Mm-hmm. And why did you land there?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about what salvaged actually means. The concern was that there are some urban wood operations in the U.S., for example, right now, where they're taking urban trees and they're making them into different products. There's actually even an urban wood certification system done by one institute. And there is a couple of consultants that are looking at salvaged wood generally as a whole, and they include wood that comes from the forest matrix. So we knew we didn't want wood from the forest matrix. We don't want people to be able to go out and harvest bug kill or hurricane damaged trees and call that FSC recycled. So it needed to be covered another way, hence through the controlled wood standard. But for urban wood and for agricultural wood, we've been having this discussion for years and years and years. It's been a motion on the GA at least once, if not twice, in the last 20 years. So we've been talking about this for a long, long time. And there's been a lot of advocates for this for a long, long time. So this was sort of our opportunity to talk about it. And in the discussions in the working group, there were some of us who wanted to bring it in immediately and others who thought it should wait until and go out into the consultation and let the consultation decide whether we should try and make it claim contributing for this cycle or not.
Okay. So it sounds like it's not a closed door, but a door that's open for a lot more input so we can actually figure out whether we want to include it or not.
I think it's most likely the best route that we could have done. There are certainly a lot of players who are not in favor of especially urban wood being part of the FSC definitions for claim contributing. But there's also a whole lot of us out there, especially in North America, who have wanted it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why they don't want it?
Well, I haven't read all of the discussion on why people do not want this to happen. One of the discussions that came up outside of the working group was the concern that trees would be removed that shouldn't be removed. There's also heritage trees. There's concern about maybe heritage trees would be removed when they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So valid concerns as well. Okay. Well, interesting what kind of inputs you will get there. Again, Doug, turning to you from a market perspective, we're talking now about recycled labels, about reclaimed materials, about a lot of taking things back into a loop, et cetera. How do you see that whole market evolving? Do you see a growing demand? Are businesses ready for all of these things? Are they ready for handling the traceability requirements it comes with and verification requirements that it comes with?
Well, I think for the non-forest salvaged wood, there are a lot of companies that have been doing this for a long time, and they know what they have to do. If we also want to look at the example of post-consumer wood, you know, if you're dismantling a building or an old barn or something like that, or even railway ties, you know, currently you can't just do that and call it FSC recycled and call it post-consumer. You have to have documentation that proves it's legally derived and that you had permission to, if it was a building, to remove the building or to dismantle the building or to remove the railway ties, whatever it happened to be. So we already have a lot of the things that are needed in place already in the standard and in practice and in the broader community in terms of what other companies that aren't FSC certified are already doing. In terms of leasing and trace and take back, it's already happening non-FSC. So it's more just a matter of, you know, what do we want to have in place that verifies that they're actually doing what most companies are already doing.
So one of the big worries that we always have in FSC is that we end up becoming this monster of a standard that requires far too much of companies, especially the small and medium-sized ones. And that's why I want to pose you this next question, because you are a group manager, which means that you certify and help get all of these small companies certified. How are the smaller companies responding to the idea of circular business models? Is this something that you're seeing them interested in? Are they interested in leasing and take-back setups? And do you think that they would be ready to comply with these requirements that are now suggested?
Well, I know that here in Vermont, we've had small furniture companies do work with some of the larger institutions, the University of Vermont, the state government, some private businesses have already been trying to promote the use of Vermont-made furniture, the Vermont-grown products. So they're already engaged in some of this in that they may not be doing leasing, but they're doing take-back for repair, at least. So I think most small companies are just as capable as large ones are in terms of take-back and leasing. I don't know that many of them would want to do the leasing side just because they may, you know, it's generally a larger companies that are doing that kind of work. In terms of the non-forest salvaged wood, there's a lot of small companies out there that are doing it already. And the same with post-consumer reclaimed materials such as dismantled buildings or barn wood or railway ties and things like that. In fact, a lot of the companies that are engaged in that kind of work are already small. They're not large companies generally. Although there are a couple, Cambium is a large company that's starting to do a lot of work with urban wood in the U.S. I know that there's one in London called Fallen and Felon, which is making furniture from non-forest salvaged wood. And another one, Angel City Lumber in Los Angeles, is also working with non-forest salvaged wood in the greater Los Angeles area. So I think on the non-forest salvaged side, there's, like I said, most of the companies aren't that big to begin with. The take back, possibly leasing, I'm not so sure that the companies that I have in my group would be involved in that.
Are there, if you then look at the bigger picture and try to look above, beyond just the small and medium-sized companies and just look generally from a company perspective, are there any practical barriers that you see in implementing these new circular business models that's being suggested? Is there any kind of support that you would encourage FSC to make sure that we have ready for them?
I think it's going to be challenging for a lot of, especially smaller companies, but all companies. It's just, there's a lot to read. And there's a lot to go through. And there have also been changes. And just to try and work your way through and try and figure out what components, what requirements, what sections of the standard actually apply to me. And I think that's where the FSC as a whole can help in terms of giving good guidance. And maybe that's something that has to filter down more to the national office level or the national initiative level. At that level, or they're the ones that engage the most with companies to begin with anyways. Maybe that one part of the note that talks about, you know, how do you identify it? There might be some, again, additional guidance needed for that. As a certificate holder, my interaction with FSC is pretty minimal, just as a certificate holder. If I'm not an international member, I may or may not engage with FSC and Bonn at all. I may engage with my national initiative, my national office, possibly. The key people that I talk to are my auditor and possibly my account manager for the certification body that I'm under. So that's where the level really needs to get down to me, is we need to get good information out to those auditors and to those account managers at the certification bodies in order to help them when the questions start coming in.
Mm-hmm. Well, agreed. And there's no doubt for me that national offices, like always, have a major role in helping to implement and train on this quite revised chain of custody standard, just also simply just because the structure is so different. If I challenge you then to look a few years ahead, Doug, how do you see the market for FSC-certified circular products developing over time? Is this something that you're seeing consumers or companies ask for and seeing a demand for in your market yet?
Well, I think there's the potential for it. Universities and government agencies have been some of the bigger drivers of things like the U.S. Green Building Council Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design program and accreditation for buildings. And I can see how this could fit right in with what they're already trying to do anyways. I mean, the governments have also been big drivers for things like recycled paper. So I believe that having this opportunity and then companies that service those markets could see it as a great opportunity as well, where they can do one step further. The university can prove legality for the furniture they're leasing. They can ensure that, you know, good labor practices have been used by the people who are both harvesting that wood and making use, you know, developing the product, creating the product. And the same with, I mean, safety is slightly a controversial one here in North America, because we feel like we have enough OSHA rules to cover everybody anyways. But if the wood was coming from somewhere outside of North America, it would give them that assurance that the workers were not only being taken care of, but they were being protected.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Morten? Are you seeing any appetite as well from a market perspective?
I think there will be a need in the market for these verification solutions, like FSC could provide with take back and leasing, and where it's not only about, yeah, we take back products, we repair them and we sell them, or we lease products. It's also about where these products are from. So you both have circularity in keeping the products in use, but you also have the materials origin as a part of this. I think there'll be a greater need in a demand in the market for that to verify it. And also, if we look into the landscape of standards and certifications, most certifications standards are focusing on recycling and maybe also more on the technical part of recycling or the technical part of reuse and repair, and not so much about also just verifying that it is actually happening and that the materials are from responsible sources. In a broader perspective, I think it's also important that there are certifications that also drive this. So it's not only legislation or companies themselves, but there are also standards and certification that can drive more take back, more leasing, more repair. I think that FSC could have that role if we implement these concepts in our standards.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've been thinking is that if we put this in our chain of custody standard, a lot of companies might not have even contemplated whether to have a take back or leasing now see it as part of their certification setup and think, maybe we need to look into that. Do you think that will also happen?
Yeah, we will also be promoting this if we have it in our standards, you know, and that could also bring ideas on leasing and take back to new markets and to new businesses, to new stakeholders. I think we can contribute to that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we will be demystifying maybe some of how do you start with setting up that system. Well, if you have a good tracking system in place, you're off to a good start. What about you, Doug? If you look out beyond just FSC and broader systems impact, how do you think that this could potentially have a kind of impact on the broader system, both environmentally, business innovation-wise, compliance-wise, et cetera? Do you think this has any impact whatsoever?
You know, it's always so interesting because these ideas come up and then it's like 30 years later, we finally start implementing them or they finally start getting sort of broader support. You know, we've had cradle to grave and, you know, all these different concepts and ideas and, you know, making products that are easier to replace or recycle or to renew, or instead of buying a refrigerator, you lease a refrigerator. And then if something happens, you just take it, you know, the manufacturer just takes it back. Or these ideas have been there for a long time. I don't know that we've seen them in the wood industry so much. So I think that there's definitely potential for bringing those kinds of context into our industry. It feels to me that the big driver for FSC in general is the supply chain. The people who are using FSC as a system, they look at their entire supply chain and they see FSC as being one of the ways to guarantee certain things in their supply chain. So you have companies now that they don't even necessarily want an FSC certified product, but at least they want their entire supply chain that involves wood to be FSC certified. You take company X and they're driving certification by having all of their supply chain get FSC certified that's involved with wood. But at the same time, they're leasing furniture for their main office. Do they think about the fact that that could be FSC certified furniture? They may not be. But clearly, if they're doing one, they should be doing the other.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we can inspire them to do more of that. That was also a motion at the last TA. We never got to it. One final question for the both of you. If you can just take one takeaway and highlight it for the listeners out there, one thing that they should be remembering after this podcast on this part of the chain of custody revision, what would that be? Doug, I'm going to start with you.
I mean, first of all, I would say, please, please, please be engaged in the consultation. We need as many bodies as possible to be commenting on what we've proposed and we put out there. And I would say that that's especially true of Section 14 and the components of leasing and take back. I mean, these are brand new concepts that are being implemented, and we need as much feedback as possible.
Martin, what would you say?
People can see now, I hope, that we are not only talking about implementing circularity in FSC, because we have been talking about that for a few years. Now it is actually happening, but as Doug said, now we also need people's input to the specific clauses so they can help us shape these requirements. So they do bring value when they are out there, hopefully in the final standards, and also are feasible to implement. So I'm just echoing what Doug said, that need people to go into the consultation platform, log in. If they don't have a login, get it, and dive into these specific parts of the consultation that's about reclaimed material and circularity.
That was today's episode of Forest for the Future and the second part of our mini-series on the revision of the chain of custody standard. A big thank you to Morten and Doug for joining me and for helping me understand how circular business models and reclaimed materials could reshape the FSC system for the future. Remember that you can participate in the consultation from November 15th and all the way until January 25th. You can learn much more on connect.fsc.org, where you can search for COC revision. I will also post a direct link in the show notes. Let's hope that Morten gets his hope fulfilled when he wishes that we, with this expansion, will inspire more companies to work with circular business models and use FSC to meet increased requirements, and that both Morten and Doug will see their call to action being heard, and a lot of you will engage in the consultation process and let your voices be heard on the suggested solution for leasing and take back in FSC, on whether pre-consumer wood should be allowed to count in FSC and under which circumstances, and whether salvage wood from urban areas should be included in this revision process before the next round of consultation. If you haven't yet listened to part one of this series, where we discuss the core structure of the revision and the social requirements with Cesar Gonzalez and Emily White, make sure that you go back one episode and check that out too. As always, thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to reach out with questions or ideas for future episodes on podcast@fsc.org. I am Laura Worm, and this was Forest for the Future.